restrictive endorsement, section 50, limits or prohibits further negotiation, gives limited authority to the endorsee. Conditional qualified endorsement adds conditions but doesn't affect negotiability. Let's understand. Restrictive endorsement under section 50 says that limits or prohibits further negotiation, gives limited authority to the endorsee. So what we are trying to see here is that the full authority is not available to the endorsee. It has only limited authority where a restrictive endorsement is made. Conditional qualified endorsement adds conditions but doesn't affect negotiability. So while the instrument can be fully negotiable, fully negotiated, there as long as the conditions are met, the negotiation cannot be stopped. Endorsement again, forms of conditional endorsement, sans recourse endorsement. An endorser can exclude liability for dishonor by stating sans recourse or without recourse. The intent must be clear. Facultative endorsement extends liability or waives rights. Example, pay a notice of dishonor waived. Let's understand what this means. A lot of legal language. Sans recourse endorsement. An endorser can exclude liability for dishonor by stating sans recourse or without recourse, which means that he cannot be held responsible, an endorser cannot be held responsible if there is no funds or the instrument is dishonored. The intent must be very clear. That means the words have to be very clearly written, whether he is accepting recourse or is not accepting recourse. Facultative endorsement extends liability or waives rights, which means that you, example, pay a notice of dishonor waived, which means that again, if it is, you must pay a, but if there is a notice of dishonor, it will be waived. Sans phrase endorsement, the endorser excludes any expense for the holder. Liability dependent on contingency. The endorser's liability depends on a contingent event, that is pay A on marriage. Okay, let's understand this. Third point, sans phrase endorsement. The endorsement excludes any expense for the holder. So, the endorser, when he has signed it, he excludes any expenses for encashing that negotiable instrument by the holder or the owner of the instrument. That means the payee in this case. Liability dependent on contingency. The endorser's liability depends on a contingent event. That means he has put a condition that the payment will happen on a condition, that is on certain things happening. For example, pay A on marriage. Effects of endorsement, section 50. Endorsement transfers ownership and the right to sue on the instrument. Cancellation of endorsement, section 40. If the endorsee damages the endorser's remedy, the endorser is discharged from liability. Let's go back again and understand. Effects of endorsement under section 50 states endorsement transfers ownership and the right to sue on the instrument. So once you have endorsed the document to somebody, it is where you are transferring the ownership to that person, and now that person is the complete owner of that instrument and the contents. Cancellation of endorsement, section 40. If the endorsee damages the endorser's remedy, the endorser is discharged from liability. What does this mean? Cancellation of endorsement. That means if the endorsee, that is the receiver, damages the endorser's remedy, that is his rights or his course of action, the endorser is discharged from liability. That means the endorser need not honor the payment that is due as per the endorsement of the negotiable instrument. The endorsement is considered cancelled. Endorsement, negotiation back. A process under which an endorsee comes into possession of the instrument, again in his own right. Here, where a bill is re-endorsed to a previous endorser, he has no remedy against the intermediate parties to him whom he was previously liable, though he may further negotiate the bill. What does this mean? There is something, this process is called negotiation back. What does negotiation back actually imply? A process under which an endorsee comes into possession of the instrument, again in his own right, which means he has endorsed it to somebody as an endorsee, and he receives the endorsed instrument back to him. Where a bill is re-endorsed to a previous endorser, he has no remedy against the intermediate parties to whom he was previously liable, though he may further negotiate the bill. That means that he has all the rights back with him, and he is not liable to any of the intermediate parties who were involved with respect to the first or the previous endorsement. Now he can renegotiate the bill further. Maturity of negotiable instruments. Section 22. Promissory notes mature on due date. Section 23. Negotiable instruments payable on demand mature when executed. Section 24. Notes payable at site mature on presentation. Section 25. If no date, matures 3 days after due date. Checks payable on demand, no grace period. So let's understand what is or when are the negotiable instruments said to have matured. The maturity of negotiable instruments is covered under different sections. Let's understand each section. Section 22 covers promissory notes. They mature on due date. So there is a due date available for a promissory note, and they will mature on that due date. Negotiable instruments payable on demand, whatever may be the kind, they mature when they are executed. That means that when they have been encashed. Section 24, notes payable at site mature on presentation. Again, notes, negotiable instruments which are payable at site mature as and when they are presented for negotiation. If no date on the instrument, then it matures 3 days after due date. That means each negotiable instrument has a final due date. Now, if there is no immediate date given for encashment or endorsement, then it matures 3 days after the due date. Checks are payable on demand. There is absolutely no grace period. Maturity rules. Section 22. Maturity occurs 3 days after the due date unless payable on demand at site or presentment. Grace days, present on the last day, early presentation is invalid. No grace period or checks for checks payable on demand. So what are the maturity rules under Section 22? Maturity occurs 3 days after the due date unless the instrument says is payable on demand at site or presentment. What is the grace period available? Grace days, present on the last, if they are, the grace period of 3 days is only permitted if it is presented on the last day. Early presentation is not valid. There is no grace period for checks which are payable on demand. Interest on grace days is based on the contract. Grace days and interest may extend beyond the principal's maturity. The law of the land where the note is accepted governs grace periods, and hundis follow local customs. Maturity of negotiable instruments. Interest on grace days is based on the contract. So whatever is agreed, the interest will be as per the contract. Grace days and interest may extend beyond the principal's maturity. So which means that the negotiable instrument may have a certain grace days specified in the contract, and this grace days may extend the actual principal's maturity. The law of the land where the note is accepted governs the grace days. That means the country's laws or the region's laws where the negotiable instrument is being negotiated will be governed. Hundis follow local customs, as they are not covered by the Negotiable Instruments Act. Section 23 states the date from which the time of maturity is to be calculated to arrive at its date of maturity. For instruments payable after a specified period, the start day is excluded and the payment day is included in calculating maturity. Section 25 discusses the case when the day on which an instrument gets mature is a public holiday. Section 23 states the date from which the time of maturity is to be calculated to arrive at its date of maturity. So, how do you arrive at the date of maturity? For instruments payable after a specified period, if there is a period, let's say it specifies, the negotiable instrument specifies maturity after or payable after 10 days, then the start day is excluded and the payment day is included in calculating the maturity. Section 25, however, discusses the case when the day on which an instrument gets mature is a public holiday. In this case, the negotiable instrument matures on the next business day or the next working day. If the maturity falls on a public holiday, which includes Sundays and other government declared holidays, payment in due course under Negotiable Instruments Act 1881. Section 10 covers this condition of payment in due course under the Act. A person liable for payment must pay as per the instrument's terms, in good faith and without negligence to be discharged. So, if somebody wants to get away from his liability and he has a negotiable instrument where he is the endorser, he is liable for payment and must pay as per the instrument's terms and conditions in good faith and without negligence. If done so, he can be discharged. Payment in due course will be considered when the following conditions are fulfilled. Payment must be in accordance with the apparent tenor of the document. The terms on the negotiable instrument dictate its intent. Payment before maturity, if payment is specified as due on or after maturity, is not considered a payment in due course. Payment is made in good faith without any negligence. Payment made with knowledge of theft or to the wrong person is not valid. When there are payments in due course, will be considered when the following conditions are fulfilled. So, payment in due course without any other interest penalties will be considered when the payment must be in accordance with the apparent tenor of the document. The terms on the negotiable instrument dictate its intent. Payment before maturity is specified as due on or after maturity is not considered a payment in due course. What does this mean? This means that if the negotiable instrument dictates its intent and says payment before maturity, if specified as due on a specific date or after maturity, it is not considered a payment in due course. It is considered a payment on maturity. Payment is made in good faith without any negligence. Payment made with the knowledge of theft or to the wrong person is not valid, which means that if you are aware that there is a theft of the negotiable instrument, or if you are aware that the wrong person is going to negotiate the document, then it is not considered as good faith and payment may not be made. Payment must be made to the person in possession of the instrument. Wrong payment without endorsement is valid if made in due course. Payment must be made in money only. The holder of a negotiable instrument can refuse payment in goods or by check, but cannot challenge the payment once accepted for the specified amount. Payment must be made to the person in possession of the instrument. It is like a bearer check. Wrong payment without endorsement is valid if made in due course, which means that if there is no endorsement or there is a blank endorsement, that means the holder is the person to receive the payment. It is valid if made in due course. Payment must be made in money only. The holder of a negotiable instrument can refuse payment in goods or by check, but cannot challenge the payment once accepted for the specified amount. What does this mean? This means that the holder of a negotiable instrument, that means who is supposed to receive the money or the payment, can refuse payment in goods or by check. That means he specifies that he needs to be paid in money only. But he cannot challenge the payment once he has accepted for the specified amount. Payment of interest. The Act lays down provisions regarding the payment of interest. Section 79. If the negotiable instrument specifies an interest rate, it applies from the due date until payment or court-directed date. Section 80. If no interest rate is stated, interest is 18% per annum from the due date until payment or court decision. So the payment of interest is very clearly defined under the Act. The Act lays down provisions regarding the payment of interest as per Section 79. If the negotiable instrument specifies an interest rate, it applies from the due date until the payment is received or a court-directed date. Section 80, if no interest rate is stated on the instrument, then the interest rate of 18% per annum from the due date until the payment or the court decision direction is considered. Check. Checks are covered under Section 138. A check is a bill of exchange payable on demand. A post-dated check is valid only on the specified date with a 6-month validity from that date. What does this imply? This implies that a check is a bill of Section 138 recognizes a check as a bill of exchange payable on demand. That means whenever the check is presented to the bank, the bank stands to clear it or make the payment. A post-dated check is valid only on the specified date with a 6-month validity from that date, which means that if you give a post-dated check to one of your friends or whoever to the payable party, you specify a date. Let us say it is from 1 month from today. The check can be encashed anytime after that specified date within 6 months from that date. Check and post-dated checks. A post-dated check is a bill of exchange until the date specified, after which it becomes a check. If dishonored, Section 138 applies. Let's understand checks and post-dated checks. What is the difference? A post-dated check is also known as PDC. A post-dated check is a bill of exchange until the date specified. That means you have specified a due date of 1 month later. It is a bill of exchange till that date. Once that date is crossed or that date is reached, it becomes a check and must be honored must be presented to the bank for encashment within 6 months from the date or specified on the check. If this check is dishonored, Section 138 would apply. Amendment in the Act of 2002. Section 6 defines a check as a bill of exchange payable on demand, which can also be in electronic form. An electronic check is a digital version of a paper check secured with a digital signature and encryption. A truncated check is a check that is converted into an electronic image during the clearing process, replacing the physical check for transmission. There was an amendment in the Act of 2002 which covers checks. What was the amendment? The Section 6 defines a check as a bill of exchange payable on demand, which can also be in an electronic form. So you need not have a paper check always. An electronic check is a digital version of a paper check secured with a digital signature and encryption, which means that you can create an electronic check through net banking and put your digital signature on the check. And of course, this will be encrypted. That means it is not easily seen unless authorized to do so. A truncated check is a check that is converted into an electronic image during the clearing process, replacing the physical check for transmission. So you present a check payable to somebody, or you have received a check from somebody and you go to the bank and present it to the bank for clearance. Now, the bank creates an electronic image of the check and forwards it to the bank from your payee, who has made the check to his bank, because the bank has, that bank has to honor that check, or rather make the payment. For this purpose, instead of transferring the check in the earlier times in physical form to that branch or to that bank, it is now directly an image, electronic image is transferred and clearance is done electronically. Amendments to section 138 to 142 include increasing punishment for dishonored checks from 1 to 2 years, extending the notice period for the payee to the drawer from 15 to 30 days. What does this mean? Let's understand further. Increasing punishment for dishonored checks from 1 year to 2 years. It was earlier 1 year of jail term, it is now extended to 2 years of jail. Extending the notice period for the payee to the drawer from 15 to 30 days, which means that if the payee, that is the person who is supposed to receive it, it's a big amount, he needs to inform the drawer of the check that he is going to encash that check in so many days. Earlier it was from 15, it was only 15 days notice, now it is 30 days. Promissory note. A promissory note is a legal document in which a borrower agrees to repay a loan within a set period. It must meet basic contract conditions like agreement and capacity to be valid. So let's understand what is promissory note. It is a legal document first, in which a borrower, that means there is one party which is the borrower, agrees to repay a loan within a set period. That is why we understood that promissory notes are similar documents is what you sign when you take a loan from the bank. It must meet basic contract conditions like an agreement and capacity to be valid. How do promissory notes work? The 1930 Geneva Convention of Uniform Law on Bills of Exchange and Promissory Notes governs both promissory notes and bills of exchange. Its guidelines further provide that the term promissory note must be written in the instrument's body and it must include an unequivocal promise to pay. Promissory notes are more legally enforceable than informal IOUs and rigid loan contracts. How do promissory notes work? They are governed by the 1930 Geneva Convention of Uniform Law on Bills of Exchange and Promissory Notes. Now, what does it govern? It governs both the promissory notes and bills of exchange, and its guidelines are: the term promissory note must be written on the body of the instrument for it to be called or recognized as a promissory note. It must include an unequivocal promise to pay. That means there is no recourse or no way of turning back. It is irrevocable promise. An irrevocable promise is called as unequivocal promise to pay the amount to the bearer or to the person who is defined on the promissory note. Promissory notes are more legally enforceable than informal IOUs. IOUs are just a confirmation that an amount is due. It doesn't say who is supposed to pay it and to whom and when. And rigid loan contracts, which can become very tough legal documents to actually negotiate, however, and enforce. However, a promissory note is much more flexible and more legally enforceable. Methods of repayment of a promissory note. A promissory note is repaid in full at the end of the term listed on the note. There are three methods of repayment. Lump sum payment. The full amount is paid in one lump sum at the end. Interest only. Payments cover only interest, not principal. Interest and principal repayment. The funds cover both the accrued interest and the note's principal. Let us understand what are the methods of repayment of a promissory note. A promissory note is repaid in full at the end of the term listed on the note. Very similar to what we were just discussing, you take a bank loan and you decide the tenure of that loan to be, let us say, 5 years, that is 60 months. At the end of the 60 months, you should have repaid the promissory note that was there. Now let's understand this as the context. What are the three methods for repayment? Lump sum payment. You can make the full payment is made in one lump sum at the end. either you deliver or you pay back all the amount at the end, or maybe if foreclosure is permitted, you can make a foreclosure. Interest only. Here you are paying only the payment, only the interest, not the principal amount. Interest and principal payment, repayment, which means that you pay back the entire amount that you owe the bank or the institution or the agency or the person in full, which means in which includes the principal amount as well as the accrued interest for the said period. Promissory note, with approval, early repayment is penalty free. Defaults may require collateral. Collateral can be any value, excess is refunded, shortages can lead to lawsuits. Every promissory note must have approval. With approval, you can make early repayment. It is penalty free. However, we all know banks charge a certain foreclosure fee. Defaults may require collateral. That means if you go beyond the agreed time period, there would be some collateral that is already taken by the bank or the institution or the person before he gave you the loan. In that case, he will try and encash that collateral, but he can encash it only to the value that is due, not to the full, and whatever is in excess is to be refunded. However, if there is a shortage of that collateral value, then it can lead to a lawsuit against you. Advantages of a promissory note: flexibility. A promissory note offers flexible payment terms. A convertible promissory note attracts investors if the company can repay the loan with interest. Brief and often unsecured. Promissory notes are brief, cost less in legal fees, and don't need notarization or recording to be valid. Let's understand what are the advantages of promissory notes. A promissory note is flexible, offers lot of flexibility in payment terms. A convertible promissory note attracts investors if the company can repay the loan with interest. So if you have a small business and you have taken money from some investors, now if you have given them a promissory note, right? Now in that situation, if you are able to pay back the full amount with the interest, there will be more investors who would be interested in investing in your company. Brief and often unsecured. Promissory notes are brief. They don't have so many legal terms and so many legal conditions with them. They cost less in legal fees and don't need notarization or recording to be valid, which means that a promissory note, once it is signed by both the parties, is valid. It does not require notarization or recording of the notarization or registration to make it valid. What are the disadvantages of promissory notes? Short-term service. It's suitable for short-term services, not for funding large projects. Detriment to new borrowers. For new borrowers, it can be risky as its simple language may hide unfavorable terms. Bill of exchange. NIs, negotiable instrument like bills of exchange, help businesses offer credit securely, ensuring payment without immediate cash transfer. What are the disadvantages of a promissory note? Short-term service. They serve and are suitable for short-term services, not for funding large projects going on for a longer period of time. Detriment to new borrowers. It would be a risky process for new borrowers, especially startups and those people who are getting into business right at the beginning, because the language is simple of a promissory note, but it may hide some unfavorable terms. After we have understood the promissory note, let's understand what is a bill of exchange. Negotiable instruments like bills of exchange help businesses offer credit securely, ensuring payment without immediate cash transfer. Let's understand this further. Essentials of a bill of exchange. A bill of exchange must be written, include all parties' names, state the payment amount, due date and currency, and be signed by the maker or the drawer, whoever draws up this bill of exchange.